You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
Let's do it later.
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy.
That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th, hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
I mean, what's that football fluke is doing? Last week they had Brady. This week they got Brady.
We're doing it. We're literally doing it differently from everybody else.
As a matter of fact, moving forward from this point on, I will not make reference to PFL.
Ready to get into it?
Yeah.
All right. We're going team by team.
I would be very careful about slinging stuff.
Am I going to get sued?
We got legal on this?
Let's send you out on the right note. PFF sucks. Have a great day, everybody.
Boom! Wow.
The new NFL league year hasn't even started, and already the entire landscape of the league has changed. That's because we don't wait for the league to start. We fire straight in with our legal tampering period or our negotiation period, and we just get all the business done in the first couple of days of this week. So we're going to break down free agency, everything that's happened so far that hasn't technically happened until, 4 p.m. today. But all the moves that have been made with our guy Trevor Sikkema in the house. How's it going, Trev? Nope, you're muted. Somebody's muted.
I'm muted. That was, professionalism at its finest. No, it's going good. No, obviously this time of year is always very funny because we have the new league year that opens up on a Wednesday, and we basically know all of the major news that is going to happen the second that it drops. So it's just always really funny. Like, we learn of these moves on a Monday, but the teams can't talk about it. So, like, the second 4 p.m. rolls around, the social team just unloads the clip, the jersey swaps, the videos, the hype tweets, like, all that kinds of stuff. So, it's a good time. So, 4 p.m., because of what we've seen over the last couple of days, is going to be pretty fun.
Yeah, and technically it does mean that none of these deals are official yet outside of re-signings. You know, players can re-sign with their team right at any point. Those are actually official and done and filed with the league, but all the agreed upon moves are not actually done until 4 p.m. today when the paperwork can get filed, which does mean in the rare occasion you do get one that is reneged on and it collapses at the last minute, and actually a guy ends up going somewhere else. Like Frank Gore at one point, right? Wasn't he supposed to go to the Eagles, and then that disappeared after the first day of the negotiation period, and he ended up going somewhere else. It has happened before, is my only point. So we're going to treat it as if it won't happen and all these deals are actually done. But it is possible that these deals could collapse.
I do think that it's funny when the team accounts realize, like, what's going on. I think this started like 4 or 5 years ago. So now the team accounts realize that they don't want to miss out on the website traffic. And so now the actual team will say, report this person to sign with this team. And I always just think it's really funny because I want to respond to all of those and just, you know, the meme where it's just like source, you know, and it's just, I'm saying that to a team account that's basically reporting that they're going to go out and get this guy. The Panthers were the ones that caught my eye the other day. Like, these are tweets from the Carolina Panthers. Report, Panthers add Seahawks guard Damian Lewis. And Panthers to add linebacker Josie Jewell, Panthers trade for Deontay Johnson, but it's all the word report is before all of those things, so yeah. It just makes me laugh.
You can't sit quiet for a couple of days and just let it
right
until it's
yeah
official.
They can't miss out on this sweet engagement.
You got to drop it. Anyway, before we get into the whole free agency craziness, you guys are going to go over to the PFF mock draft sim, pff.com/mock, and use the promo code 30MDS to get yourself 30% off a PFF Plus subscription. 30MDS. gets you 30% off, and you can draft to your heart's content, fix your team, use by far the best mock draft simulator out there, powered, of course, by our good friend Trevor Sikkema's work as the lead draft analyst over at PFF.com. So get in there, 30 MDS, and fix your team using the mock draft sim, including trading players. All right, Trev, let's start with your favorite sort of haul so far, winners of free agency from a team point of view. Whose work have you been a fan of so far?
As I pull up the PFF tracker, which everybody else should also go to pff.com and make sure that they're keeping up with the tracker. The first team that I want to shout out is the Houston Texans. I think the Houston Texans are big winners this week. I love the move for them to bring in DeNico Autry from the Tennessee Titans. I love them bringing in Azeez Al-Shaair as well for the linebacker level, reuniting him with D'Amico Ryans. I really liked the Jeff Okuda signing too. Like, I liked when the Detroit Lions signed Jeff Okuda or brought Jeff Okuda in. And obviously it didn't work out there. So I'm holding on to hope. I like the one-year deal with Jeff Okuda. But then the one that really put it over the top was the Danielle Hunter signing for me, because you lose Jonathan Greenard. Jonathan Greenard actually went to Minnesota, and then Danielle Hunter went from Minnesota to Houston. So it was kind of funny, a little swap there. But this dude, I know that he had the back surgery in, what was it, 2020, and then he tore his pec in 2021, and we're like, ah, man, now he's getting up there in age. Is Danielle Hunter ever going to be the same? Last 2 years, he's played all 17 games, started in all 17 games each of the last two seasons, and last year, he played the most snaps he's ever played in, had the third-best pressure percentage, which was basically the same as what it was the year before, so you know that he's just playing really well. And he had 80 total pressures. Like, this guy's still an absolute legit edge rusher. So now you got the DeNico Autry, you got the Danielle Hunter, you obviously have Will Anderson that you drafted last year as well. So I love what Houston was able to do, and I love the plan of, we're going all in on free agents on defense. And that frees them up, I think, for number 23 to be used on an offensive player. But they've done so well with signing guys on defense that I think that it could also signal them being aggressive in the first round. Maybe this is a team that really wants a Brian Thomas Jr. or an A.D. Mitchell, or maybe they think that they're going to go off the board before 23. They've given themselves the flexibility to do what they need to do to make a big splash on offense in the draft. So for what free agency is, supplement a lot of your needs to then take a big chance at a big swing when it comes to the NFL draft. I thought Houston did fantastic this week.
Texans are definitely one of the teams I had on my winners list as well. I think they would really like to use that first round pick on an offensive lineman. That's one of the areas where they haven't really bolstered, and I think they want to upgrade that line. One of the things they did that you didn't mention was they trade for Joe Mixon, so they get their running back.
We
mentioned that PFF Bobby doesn't necessarily, fall in lockstep with all the analytics approaches when it comes to running back and the conventional wisdom. Bobby wants a better run game than they had last year. And you knew that they were going to go and try and do that somewhere. There were talks that they were in on Saquon Barkley before the Eagles made that happen. But getting Joe Mixon, I think, is a good move there as well. He's still a kind of bell cow type of running back that can do good things behind a solid offensive line in that system. Dalton Schultz re-signing, I'll give him credit for that. DeNico Autry as well, I think, is one of the most underrated defensive linemen in the game. Him signing alongside Danielle Hunter, alongside Will Anderson already there, like, that is a nasty defensive front in the making. And as you said, upgrades at linebacker and bringing in a kind of, I like the Okuda signing, not necessarily because I think there's it's likely to work out, but because you might as well, like, always kick the tires on that kind of talent. The guy was the third overall pick of the draft, hasn't worked out in the NFL so far, but let's give it a shot. If you get something out of him in a good system with good coaching, it's a steal. So definitely like the Texans. Who else have you got on your list?
Who's next for me? Oh, Atlanta. So I know that we're going to talk about this a little bit later in the show when we kind of talk about quarterbacks, but Atlanta has to be mentioned here. They didn't make a ton of signings, but the two signings that they made, I think, again, really, well, three signings. Sorry, all due respect to Charlie Warner. Make sure I give him the shout out there. Darnell Mooney and Kirk Cousins. Kirk Cousins is the big one, and then Darnell Mooney is the other. And I think that certainly with them going as all in on Kirk Cousins as they are, it takes away the mystery of the number 8 overall pick. But it also, just like I said with Houston, gives them a ton of flexibility, especially now that they brought in Darnell Mooney. So They've got Mooney to sort of round out their offensive weapons with him and Drake London and Kyle Pitts and Bijan Robinson and some other guys that they have on the team as well. And with the quarterback in place, they've got a solid offensive line. Now, if they stick at eight, they've got an opportunity to take the best edge rusher in the draft. But they could also sit here and say, man, we could still get even more aggressive if we wanted to. Maybe even with Darnell Mooney, maybe we want to go get Malik Nabers. Maybe we want to go get Romo Odunze. Maybe somehow, some way, Marvin Harrison Jr. falls. So I really like what Atlanta did, because without having a top three overall pick, sure, you can say to yourself, well, we could move up, but that's no guarantee, right? And I think that the point of free agency, like we've said so many times before, fill the needs, which allows you to be as flexible as possible to go get the right player, the most talented player that you can when it comes to draft weekend. Them going out to get Kirk Cousins was the right move, in my opinion. Over signing Russell Wilson, over trading for Justin Fields, Kirk Cousins was the right he was the right quarterback for this team at this time, and now they get to have a lot more flexibility in the draft. So Atlanta has to be one of my favorite hauls, even though they were relatively quiet, because they made the move that mattered most. They made the move that everybody was kind of waiting on when it came to this free agency period of where Cousins was going to go. They win those sweepstakes, and I think they're going to start as – I know Tampa fans are going to be mad at me again for this, but like, I think Atlanta's probably going to start as favorites to win the NFC South next year, even with the Bucs bringing everybody back after they won the division because of the rest of that team and how it's shaping up. And even though it's a new head coach, I think that they're going to be favorites to win that division.
Yeah, I mean, there was one high-level starting veteran quarterback available this offseason, Kirk Cousins, and the Falcons got him. You know, we can debate where Russell Wilson is in that picture, but Kirk Cousins is the closest thing to a sure, high-quality starter available, even factoring in his age and coming off the Achilles. So Atlanta going to get that guy, given where they were in the draft, I think can only be seen as a good thing. They were willing to go to a financial place that the Vikings weren't, and that was all it was going to take to bring in Kirk Cousins. Now, even then, it's being termed a four-year deal. It isn't really. It's effectively a two-year deal for like $100 million dollars. So, like, at that price point, $50 million a year for, if Cousins plays the way he has for the last like 5 years or anything like it, $50 million a year is fair market value for that, right? It's not even top of the market value for that. It's fair market value for the level of play Kirk Cousins has had over the last few years. So I think from that perspective, it's a good move. And as you said, that then frees up number eight. And not just that, but it frees up number eight and more capital that it probably would have taken to go and get a quarterback if you wanted one in the draft. Like, if they hadn't done anything in free agency, if they were going into the draft needing their starter, either they were probably picking QB4 at number eight, or they were going to have to trade to two or three to go get their guy, at which point you're not even talking about pick number eight. You're talking pick number eight and everything else you're going to have to package to go make that trade. So yes, all of that is saved by having Kirk Cousins and instead. And I agree with you. I think they would love for one of those top three wide receivers to be available there. And now you're talking a group that is Drake London, Kyle Pitts, Darnell Mooney, Malik Nabers or Odunze, and Bijan out of the backfield, like, and an offensive line, by the way, that's better than any that's ever been put in front of Kirk Cousins in Minnesota. That has the recipe for this offense to be really good, even if PFF Zach doesn't even know what he's doing. And let's assume he does, given that he's a Sean McVay disciple. And he, you know, we know Zach's smart. So all signs are good for Atlanta. I agree. It's only, frankly, if they'd done nothing else, if it was just Kirk Cousins and then, you know, then we declare for the offseason, it still would have been one of the best free agent hauls because that's what they needed to secure.
I agree with you. I agree. I like what Atlanta did a lot. And again, like you said, if they come away with one of Odunze or Malik Nabers, this offense just got terrifying. I mean, that offense at that point becomes so talented that fantasy football people are once again going to be furious with the Falcons because there is only one football to go around and you're not going to be able to have three 1,000-yard receivers and Bijan Robinson, who's supposed to go for 1,000 yards and then 600-700 receiving. Like, that just it's going to be impossible. But for the talent level, that's the expectation for a lot of these guys. So all of a sudden, if they were to do that, they become one of the best offenses in the NFL, in theory.
Definitely. And I just checked the odds. So now you can pass the buck to other people. It's not your fault. Atlanta is, in fact, the favorite for the division as of now.
Oh, I'll still get yelled at, though.
In multiple different spots. So at least four separate spots.
I'll still get yelled at, though, because the Bucks were, I think, before the season, projected to get a top 10 pick. I think they're like over-under win-loss was 6.5 or something like that. And so I predicted that the Saints were going to win the division. And that didn't stop people from coming after me after the Bucks ended up winning it.
No, but it's always important to be
able I appreciate you looking out for me. It won't matter.
No, it's always important, though, to be able to, you know, put the blame somewhere else. I am merely the messenger. This is somebody else's message that I am conveying. Now, as you say, 100%. That won't stop people from blaming you. But at least morally, you can feel justified by that.
Yes.
All right, who else's draft or who else's free agency overhaul did you like?
So I have one more that really stuck out to me. It's the Chicago Bears.
Oh,
I liked what the Chicago Bears were able to do. Now, a lot of it was, again, like defensive players, but think about what Chicago has in the upcoming draft, okay? They've got pick number one and they've got pick number nine. You look at this team and, okay, it's not like an NFL all-star team yet. Ryan Poles has made his additions. He's kind of made his splashes here, right? Because when you look at free agency, they're able to retain Jalen Johnson, which I think was huge for them. They also bring in Kevin Byard, who I still think is a dang good safety. I really do. So look at their secondary. It's Jalen Johnson. It's Jaquan Brisker. It's Kevin Byard. It's Tyreek Stevenson. It's Kyler Gordon. All players that I like. You've got two linebackers that you paid a lot of money to, but okay, fine. Cards are on the table. You made a bet with these two linebackers, Tremaine Edmonds and TJ Edwards. There you go. Those are the guys that you brought in. That's the position that you brought in there. You got Montez Sweat, who you made a big trade for, giving up a second-round pick, and he proved to absolutely be worth it for you. You got an interior defensive line that is a mix of young guys that you've drafted over the last couple of years that you hope continue to develop that can be really strong, right? I look at guys like, you know, Zach Pickens and German Dexter, who are really stout, strong players to hopefully be able to take up some two gaps for you, free up the edge rushers, free up the linebackers. So the vision is there. For that whole defense, basically, the vision is there. Maybe you want to upgrade at the other edge rusher spot, but a lot of the rest of it is kind of, you made your bed. And so that, you I shouldn't say made your bed, because the other part of that phrase is now you got to lie in it. So I'm not necessarily saying they're dead. Make your bets is probably the better way to say it. Chicago has made all the bets that they can make on defense right now, and I commend them for it, okay? You look at the offensive line, getting better. They got Tevin Jenkins. They got Darnell Wright. They got Braxton Jones. It's not perfect, but they got some guys up front. They signed DeAndre Swift. They have Khalil Herbert. They've got Roschon Johnson as well. Now they bring in Gerald Everett to pair with Cole Kmet as well, so it's a nice little 1-2 tight end system there. You got DJ Moore. Yes, you could use another receiver, but going back to how I brought this up, they played free agency perfectly because they have pick number one and they got pick number nine. You're drafting a quarterback at number one, with Caleb Williams, we assume, and number nine now, they're going to target one of those top receivers. They might have to trade up to go get one of them, but you have allowed yourself to now be aggressive. Again, like you can take more draft capital and move up if you need to. Maybe go from number nine to number five with the Los Angeles Chargers and go get one of those receivers. Because if you look at the Chicago Bears depth chart and you plug in Caleb Williams and Malik Nabers / Rome Odunze, this is a playoff caliber roster. This is now the ball is in your court to the coaching staff. Ryan Poles did what he needed to do. This team is good enough, especially in the NFC at its current state, to make the playoffs. And I think that that's why this has to be one of my favorite hauls, because Chicago continues to go in the right direction. You pick a quarterback at one, you get an offensive weapon at nine, you trade Justin Fields, and boom, this team's basically right where you would have wanted them to be to legitimately compete for a playoff spot in 2024.
Bears were not on my list, I have to say. I love the move they made that I love the most is re-signing Jalen Johnson to the contract they got him for. Like, that deal not resetting the cornerback market, given the circumstances involved, elevated salary cap, the fact that he had come off a career year, all those kinds of things. Them getting him for a deal that I think ranks fourth or fifth or something in APY for cornerbacks, I think is an absolute steal for them. Gerald Everett, Kevin Byard in particular, Jonathan Owens, the safety coming over from Green Bay. These are all solid moves, I think. Ryan Bates added to the offensive line. The DeAndre Swift deal, I didn't really understand, and particularly given, I think that was the very first deal announced in the NFL, right? It was like 2 minutes into free agency.
Which, the Swift deal?
Yeah, DeAndre Swift to Chicago. Yeah. It was like the first
piece of business.
It was
Swift and then like 2 hours of nothing.
Yeah. So that, when you get, like, they already have, you know, Roschon Johnson, Khalil Herbert. They already got a good backfield. For them to prioritize DeAndre Swift, of all people, coming off the year he had in Philadelphia, where, you know, the Eagles pick him up and I was like, ah, the Eagles do it again. DeAndre Swift's going to be, you know, league-leading rusher, et cetera. And he was fine. For them to prioritize him at $8 million a year felt strange to me, and I don't really understand that. But overall, I think it's solid. Let me give you the next team I had on my list, because it's in the same division. I really like what the Lions have done. Like, again, they're not necessarily going crazy, but they're adding nice pieces to ensure they don't have to chase anything in the draft, which I think is always a smart strategy. They bring back a guy like Emmanuel Mosley. They trade for Carlton Davis, who I think is a nice fit. Again, adding like capable defensive starters in the secondary. Adding a Marcus Davenport for a one-year flyer, I'm always a fan of that. I mean, obviously the Vikings did it last year. Didn't work out at all. Basically didn't play all season long. I still like it as a concept every year. Like, sometimes those aren't going to work out. When they do, you're getting a player that is a really high-level complement to an Aiden Hutchinson on the other side, which was the single biggest weakness of this defense last year. They add Amik Robertson, I think, who's a solid guy in the secondary as well. And then they bring back Graham Glasgow as one of their starting two guards, letting another one leave. I think that's a solid sort of, if unspectacular, round of business for Detroit.
Yeah, no, I think that, look, this was a team that was very close to a Super Bowl last year, and I think that they did a good job of retaining a lot of that roster and making the little additions that they were going to be afforded to make. You know, they're making bets with a Carlton Davis because, okay, well, why is he available for a third? Well, he's available for a third because he's been injured a lot over the last couple of years, and his plays declined from when he was one of the better shutdown corners in the game, I would say, you know, 3-4 years ago. So his play has not been going in the right direction, and neither has his health, but you take a chance on it because if he's fully healthy and maybe he bounces back, because we know that corner can be very roller coaster up and down anyways, I like that bet. I like the Amik Robertson bet as well. And then I like the fact that they also brought back Emmanuel Mosley, who I was really excited about for this team before he got hurt last year. So they're addressing corner the way that they need to. They bring in Davenport. Again, anytime a team does well enough in free agency to really supplement their biggest roster needs with players that you could go, you know what? All right, they were a free agent for a reason, but you can believe in this player. You can get some contributions from them. Anytime you're able to do that, realistically, it's a job well done in free agency. So I didn't think about Detroit, but you're right. This is, looking at their lineup, this is a really solid week for them.
Who else have you got on your list? I got one more team on mine.
I don't have anybody on mine. Those are my three. Who else you got?
I got the Philadelphia Eagles.
Sure. That's easy, though. They're the splash team.
They are, but I like what they've done. Like, you look across the board, okay, they re-signed a couple of players. I don't want to focus too much on that. But edge Bryce Huff, like, they've restocked that defensive line, which I think is always an important thing for the Eagles. You know, they've re-signed Brandon Graham somehow, is still coming back to give it one more shot. But they lost Fletcher Cox to retirement. You know, the defensive line, they've drafted a lot of young guys. They are still, I think, something of an unknown quantity. Guys like Nolan Smith, they will expect to take a step forward, but we don't know yet if he's going to be able to do that and have that kind of impact. So bringing in Bryce Huff, who in the last 2 years ranked second in the NFL in pass rush win rate. That list is Myles Garrett, number one, Bryce Huff, number two, Micah Parsons number 3, Nick Bosa number 4. So it's like all of the superstars.
The Mount Rushmore of current pass rushers.
Yeah, exactly. It's all of the superstars, and Bryce Huff is in that like conversation for the best pass rush win rate over the last 2 years. Somebody complained that I used the last 2 years. If you used just last year, just flip Micah Parsons and Bryce Huff, and he's still in the top 4. It's the same list of humans, and he's just third instead of fourth. Point being, he's been one of the most effective edge rushers in the NFL over the last couple of seasons in terms of just how often he beats his guy and is in a position to get pressure on the quarterback, whether or not it comes. And the big question was, okay, can that happen if he doubles his workload, right? Because he's never played 500 snaps in a season. Like, is he going to get the Cameron Wake treatment where we're like, wow, this guy's crushing it on a small sample size. Let's really ramp up his workload, and all of a sudden we've created an all-pro. The Eagles are the one team in the NFL that don't need to find that out. They can give him the same 400-snap workload, and if he can't handle more than that, they don't need more than that because they want to work off a rotation. So I love the Eagles adding him. If he is capable of doing more than that, I'm sure they'll find that out and scale it up accordingly. But I love signing a guy that you know is going to be one of the most impactful guys on the snaps that he has, and then you have the flexibility of being able to increase that workload, but you don't need to.
And I wonder what this means for Nolan Smith, right? Like, I was hoping to see an uptick in his usage and his emphasis on that defensive line. And we still might get that, you know, like you said, that's a heavy rotational team, right? But you're going to give a lot of that stuff to Huff, right? I mean, like, Huff and Reddick are now two players who, on third and long, I mean, you're just unleashing those two guys, and chances are somebody's getting after the passer. So I don't think that you can – there's not going to be too many times where you can afford to just go, hey, yeah, let's give Nolan Smith a shot here when you've got those two guys that you can deploy on third and long. So I guess that's just a development that we'll have to watch out for, because Nolan Smith is somebody who I really loved in that draft class.
I mean, they had two edge rushers last season play 800-plus snaps. I don't think they want to do that generally. You know, I think if you look previously on those teams, they are much more evenly balanced with sort of edge 2 or edge 3, 4, and 5 getting more snaps. So I think that's just what they're trying to reset. You know, instead of giving all the snaps to Sweat and Reddick, they want to, they want more for Huff. Obviously, he's going to get 400 or 500 snaps. I think they would like Nolan Smith to have more than 180 or whatever he had last season and
step
up.
Yeah, it just was not a lot.
Yeah, so I think that's what their approach is on that. Saquon Barkley is an interesting move. Like, the Eagles of all teams being the one to prioritize him and go out and sign him quickly. It is, I think, significant that, you know, the Giants had a terrible offensive situation, one of the worst offensive lines in the NFL, no passing game to speak of. Like, the Eagles have the best offensive line in the NFL, even with turnover, you know, even losing Jason Kelce and needing to make some changes there. Minimum, it's going to go from one end of the spectrum to the other with, you know, other things in his favor as well. I think Saquon Barkley should look fantastic in that offense relative to how he looked with the Giants. And then Chauncey Gardner-Johnson in the secondary is another significant addition for them. Didn't get to see the full impact that he was going to have in Detroit because of injury. But if he's able to come in and make an impact in that secondary, suddenly you've gotten better on the defensive line, you've gotten better in the secondary, and you've added a running back who is stepping into a ready-made environment for him to be good.
I don't hate the Saquon Barkley deal. I really don't. It's, in fact, I'm happy for the dude because he's been super talented and he's been on a Giants team that hasn't exactly helped him out over the last couple of years. You know, he's been chasing that production and efficiency that we saw that rookie year from him and then really haven't seen since. Like, over the last 2 years, his production has been fine overall, but I think it's more from a volume standpoint. 2 years ago, it was more efficient. Last year, it was tough. And so you're just going to a much better situation, and it felt like that's what we needed anyways, right? Barkley's probably been in contract negotiations with the Giants for, what, 3 years now, right? Trying to get something done. They don't get something done. It's like, come on, man. Anybody who works any sort of job is not going to perform as well as they need to when they're not appreciated. Yes, even when you play a game for a living. So I think a change of scenery was needed for Barkley. It's kind of funny that it's a division rival, but I'm excited to see what he's going to do in that Philly offense.
And all these guys going after the money, they're just looking after their family, Trev. And if you've got a family like I do, like they do, then you need to get term life insurance to protect
them.
Wow. Thank you. Thank you. It's one of the smartest financial decisions you can make, and the start of the new year, March the 13th, is the perfect time to get it done so you can focus on whatever else the year has in store for you. Fabric was designed by parents for parents to help you get a high-quality, surprisingly affordable term life insurance policy in less than 10 minutes. Fabric has flexible policies that fit your family and your budget with quality policies like $1 million in coverage for less than a dollar a day. Get your personalized quote in minutes and then apply it when it's convenient for you. It's all online and on your schedule. You could go from start to covered in less than 10 minutes with no health exam required. Join the thousands of parents who trust Fabric to protect their family. Apply today in minutes at meetfabric.com/PFFNFL. That's meetfabric.com/PFFNFL. M-E-E-T fabric.com/PFFNFL. Policies issued by Western Southern Life Insurance Company, not available in certain states. Prices subject to underwriting and health questions.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
It's only a kick, a jump, a block, it's only a serve, it's only a tackle, a run, it's only for the fans. After all, it's only pressure. You got this. Adidas.
All right, Trev. I think we have a bit of a... breaking news, but I have to figure that out.
Do we?
I think so. Wait, 1 second.
Does somebody big sign? Somebody big get released?
No. Far more important than that. But I just need to check because the message I received is somewhat unclear and cryptic. So I have to wait until he replies before I can announce what I think has been a wildly successful campaign waged on this podcast. I'll come back. To that. Let's circle back because he's not replying in timely fashion.
All right. Let's hit the next topic, and then we'll get in them.
One team I've seen mentioned on a lot of like winning, best hauls, winners of free agency that I can't put in there because of like it's Minnesota, right? I like Minnesota's business overall, but the Kirk Cousins thing is so big looming over that, and not so much. There's definitely an argument that. Financially, the Vikings did the right thing walking away from Kirk Cousins, given where they were. And if
I was
going to
say, what's the big win here for them?
I like their moves. I mean, I think overall they've added Jonathan Grenard, they've added Andrew Van Ginkle, they've added.
But they lost Hunter.
Sure. So that but Van Ginkle being added to it as well. They got cheaper and younger.
Yeah.
They got cheaper and younger at edge rusher.
So if your goal was to be in more of a healthier rebuild spot, I get it. But the Grenard one is tough for me because you lost Hunter, so you got Grenard, great, but I think Hunter's better. And obviously, like, you signed Sam Darnold, you lose Kirk Cousins, that's fine because you're going in a different direction, but like you also have pick 11 right now, so yes. You're basically screwed until you're not is basically how I have to look at it for the Minnesota Vikings. So, but I didn't mean to cut you off. Keep going.
No, well, I mean, I think they got younger and cheaper at edge rusher. They bring in Grenard, they bring in Van Ginkle, they bring in linebacker Blake Cashman, who had an amazing season last year. Like I think, and Aaron Jones, I think, was phenomenal down the stretch last season. So overall, I think they made a lot of good moves, but it all has to be looked at through the prism of you don't have a quarterback. You just lost Kirk Cousins. You're sitting there at pick number 11. There's no obvious path to a quarterback, and signing Sam Darnold even as a bridge quarterback is just kind of sad. So I can't put the Vikings as winners of free agency, even if other people have.
I'm actually a little bit higher on the Sam Darnold move. Like I don't hate the Sam Darnold move. Like knowing exactly what it is, right? It's a one-year, $10 million deal. No matter who the Vikings draft, because I think the Vikings have already made calls to Washington at 2, New England at 3, Los Angeles at 5, Arizona at 4. Not sure why I went out of order there. I think they've already made the calls to these teams for like, okay, what do we need to do to move up at this point in time? And so they have a rough idea. Now, prices change as time goes on, but they've got a rough idea of what it's going to take. So I don't think they're – I mean, I was about to say, I don't think they're in the Drake May conversation, but apparently the NFL is not nearly as high on Drake May, which is baffling to me. But anyways, they're in a situation where no matter who they draft, it's not going to be Caleb Williams. And so knowing that it's not going to be Caleb Williams, Darnold's probably going to start the season. I probably won't start for a long time, but he should. You know, like, especially if it's McCarthy, like if it's JJ, don't throw JJ out there week one. What are you doing? You care about him more than that. I care about him more than that. We're trying to help him. So don't throw him out there week one. I'd say the same thing about like Jaden Daniels, right? There's a lot of things that Jaden Daniels did well last year. Throwing over the middle is not one of them. Guess what you got to do in the NFL? You got to throw over the middle. And so he still, I think, has a ways to go when it comes to anticipating those things. Because he doesn't – Jaden Daniels, his arm is being romanticized, if you ask me. He does not have this howitzer of an arm like Anthony Richardson, like Will Levis, not even like C.J. Stroud, right? So it's not as if Jaden at the NFL level can afford to be late between the numbers over the middle. He can't see something late and then go, oh, okay, yep, there it is. Let me fire this bad boy in there. He's got the arm strength where, and I don't mean to be too harsh on it, but he's got to anticipate it. He's got to be able to see things. And you got to play to be able to get that ultimately, but you also have to have a good baseline before you play, or else you're just going to lose your confidence, and I don't want that from him. Drake May, I could, out of all of those quarterbacks, see starting right away, but why do that if you don't have to? So no matter what, I don't hate the Darnold signing. I think it's a pretty good signing for them, given what I think their quarterback situation is going to be.
I just think anybody selling a fan on the concept of Sam Darnold being your starter week one, even if it's only for 4 weeks, like he's a bridge to something in the first month of the season, it's just miserable. Well, nobody's happy with that. Nobody's sitting there, you know, your season ticket, your renewal form arrives, and you're like, ugh, first 4 weeks of Sam Darnold. Anyway, are you ready for the news? I have it confirmed now.
Sure. I have no idea what this is, but sure. Let's go for it.
Every now and again, revolution can create great change, and great things can come from it, right?
What is it? Herb Brooks quote?
Look, what am I watching, Miracle? Just sit back and relax and be prepared to bask at what we have achieved. We, you and I, have achieved live on this show. Remember, the European Football Elite, they tried to set up a Super League. The fans revolted. They said, hell no, and it did not happen. It crumbled. They all walked away. They backtracked. They said, sorry, we appreciate, we made a mistake, and we're gonna fix it. Another mistake was made. Somebody came out with PFF's athleticism score, and this was termed PFF GAR, right? It was a mistake. It was an error in judgment, and we campaigned to fix it on this show. It has been fixed. Michael Ayers sent me the message. PFF GAR is now PFF GAS. G-A-S, Game Athletic Score, is now a thing. We have done it. Revolution has succeeded. Long live GAS.
You and I were talking. Where were we talking about this? Were we talking about this at the combine or something where you had brought this up and you were furious about it? And I agree with you completely because game athleticism. The acronym being GAS just makes more sense.
Yeah.
He's got the gas. He's got the juice. You know, like whatever it is, it just flows with exactly what it is. And so, you know what, buddy? You fought for it. I'm proud of you. I'm proud of you. Good job. The people may not remember you.
No.
But they will remember.
It's not about me. It's about what we've achieved. It's about what we've set in motion and the legacy that we will leave after we're long gone, right? That's a cold cold label on the screen, by the way. Sam finally gets a W. Anyway, back to free agency. Okay, where are we going?
You still have to show me where I can access this in Ultimate.
Oh, yeah. We'll get you. So I think Steve needs to turn it on for you. I don't think you have it like as a default option.
I haven't found it. So you guys are out here talking about it, yeah. And I'm like, hey, you know what? Would be nice if the draft guy could get the game athleticism score metrics.
No, he had been bringing it up for weeks on the show, and he's like, you know, you got that right. No, like. anyway,
flip the switch, Steve.
Right, turn it on, hit it. All right, so. Let's talk about Justin Fields for a moment. Everyone, I think, expected Justin Fields to be traded at this point. The Bears themselves, before the combine started, were like, yeah, we want to get this done before free agency. We want to be proactive in trading Fields away because we want to do right by Justin. And here we are with free agency, I guess, technically not quite started, but about to start. And Justin Fields is still sitting there on the Chicago Bears roster. So where is this market and what's going to happen with all this?
Yeah, so the market just gets, it feels like it gets lower the longer this goes on. And look, you know, I was on, I was on some radio hits and, you know, people in Chicago, I was talking with them and it's like, oh, no, they said they're going to trade it. They said they're going to trade him before free agency. So we're going to have the answer soon enough. And my response to them was the same every time. That's really nice. Okay. But owners and general managers, they can lie with their words. They're not going to lie with their money and their assets. They're not. And when it comes to getting the best draft pick possible for Justin Fields, sure, it sounds nice. We're going to trade him before free agency. We're going to let him know before free agency. If they believe they can get a better deal for him, if they wait, guess what they're going to do? They're going to wait. Plain and simple. And the longer this went on and the more that the Chicago Bears kind of came out publicly and said, again, like, oh, we want to do well by Justin. Okay, guess what the draft compensation was probably from that point on? Crap. It was probably as low as it had been to that point. So, man, we were starting off. People, there were debates of, oh, is this guy worth the back end of the first round pick? He's worth 2 second round picks, you know, a second and a third. What, dude, I bet Justin Fields gets traded for a fourth round pick at this point. I think a fourth round pick gets it done. And I don't know what team is going to pay for it. It feels as though the Saints are now in play, right? No Jameis. So maybe you could trade something if you want that kind of a backup, but they have Taysom Hill. So like maybe they don't think they need it. You know, not saying that Justin Fields is Taysom Hill, but I'm saying like the Saints clearly think enough of Taysom Hill where he could get it done for them as a backup. Maybe Seattle, right? Seattle's in a situation where they just restructured Geno Smith's contract. Pete Carroll's out as head coach. Is this the last year that Geno's in Seattle? If that is the case, you'd probably take a day three pick, trade it for Justin Fields, get him in the system already, get him in with the coaching staff, and maybe he develops into somebody that you got enough faith in going into the year after that. So I look at Seattle, but those are the two teams that really stick out to me because Falcons, no, we thought about them as a potential destination. That's out. Steelers, no, that's out. Where's he going?
But you brought up the key word, right? Like Justin Fields is now being seen as a backup option, not as a starter. Like we have almost completely run out of potential starting options for Justin Fields. And if one of the few starters potential starting spots was liked him, it probably would have been done already. Now, maybe it doesn't work out that way. You know, there's several teams now in this like quarterback desperate alley in the sort of middle of the first round, 10, 11, 12, or 11, 12, 13, the Vikings, Raiders, and Broncos all still need a starting quarterback of some description, right? And are presumably going after one in the draft, notwithstanding Gardner Minshew, Sam Darnold, bridge moves, right? They are still looking for something that makes sense more than like 2 months of a season. If one of them strikes out, you know, they can't all come out of the draft with quarterbacks, right?
It's just, right. I mean,
at least
right.
Very unlikely that those three teams all secure their future starter given where they are. So if one of those teams misses the way the Raiders did last season where they, you know, they were trying to make things happen, didn't, and they end up settling for Jimmy Garoppolo, like maybe Fields becomes a fallback option for one of those after the draft. And maybe this is how long this drags out. But we've gone from, yeah, there'll be a team or two that's interested in Fields as a starter to he's now a backup. And if he's now a backup, that's what turns this into like a fourth round pick, which, by the way, was what Trey Lance was traded for. Like this is not unprecedented.
Lance went for a fourth. Mac already went for a sixth.
Right.
I mean, Zach Wilson's going to go for pennies.
And the critical thing is, you have to, it's always, the contract is always relevant when you're talking about trade value, right? Josh Rosen went for a second round pick a year after he was drafted, For a couple of reasons. Number one, it was only a year. Okay, it was a terrible year, but there's only so much one bad year in a terrible situation can damage your draft stock. So he went for a second. The other thing is he was cost control for a lot longer, right? That's part of what you're trading for when you're trading for a quarterback is that cost control rookie contract. Justin Fields is now cheap for one more year. Any team that brings him in has got 1 year of cheap Justin Fields. After that, it's $25 million, Justin Fields, if you want to pick up the fifth-year option and keep him around on that, which is still, you know, if he turns into a superstar, that's value. But if he doesn't, $25 million is a significant amount of money. Gardner Minshew just got $14 million guaranteed, I think, committed to him. So, there's a gap.
There's people in the chat who are saying Raiders, but, like, why would the Raiders do that? Why would you have a three-headed quarterback competition? And for whatever you want to say about Aiden O'Connell, if you don't think that he is a long-term start in the NFL, he's still on the team with a cost-controlled contract. Like, they're, why would they move on from him for that? I don't think that they're going to. So Fields is also in a tough spot because what maybe seemed like a strength at the beginning of all this now turns into a major weakness. What team out there wants their backup quarterback to have a massive hive of their fan base calling for them at all times if they don't have a super solidified guy? Like, even the Saints, right? Saints fans are ready to move on from Derek Carr. If they trade for Justin Fields, the second that Carr wavers at all whatsoever, you're going to have half the fan base. We'll see, but whatever. You're going to have a big chunk of the fan base already calling for Justin Fields, and that might be in week two, week three of the season. Does any coach really want that kind of distraction? I mean, it's not apples to apples. It's not the same thing, but we heard people talk about that when it came to Tim Tebow. You know, like I don't want Tim Tebow as a backup on my team.
Right.
He's not a backup quarterback. You're going to have people caping for him to start the second the starting quarterback misses a throw, whether it was justified or not. For Tebow, it obviously wasn't at the NFL level, but I think that is also a factor. Not the teams want their backup quarterback to be bad, but if they want a quarterback competition, that's one thing. If they don't, then all of a sudden bringing in Justin Fields gives them a situation in the locker room that they do not want. So I think that goes against it as well. So the field stuff, again, like I think that the rally around Justin Fields and how good he could have been and how he improved a little bit last year, like that was a really good strength for him 6 months ago. It's not anymore. Now that no team really wants him as a backup, I think that it's actually probably seen as a negative from some teams. So a lot of people threw out the Patriots as well. I think the Patriots are an option, you know, depending on what they end up doing at the number three overall pick, perhaps that's an option for them. But it's really hard to find a spot that quote unquote makes sense for Justin Fields at this point.
Yeah.
Because wherever he goes, it's just going to be a lot of media, a lot of circus, and is it worth it for these teams? And I don't know.
It's difficult because if you view him as a starter, you get one cheap year of Justin Fields, you get 1 year of him at $25 million, and then you have to give him $50, $60 million a year, whatever the market rate for the top quarterback deal is, right? And he's gotten better every single year of his career. I think there is still potential that he can be a high-level NFL starter, but it is still potential. It's projection. We don't know if he can get there. And you need to know in a year if he's going to get there, because that's when the money starts to get expensive. So if you view him as a starter, you have very limited runway to figure out if you're right before the money gets prohibitive. And if you view him as a backup, he's only a backup for a year, because after a year, the money gets prohibitive, right? So I actually think that limits him to a few teams where you're right. Most teams do not want a quarterback that they view as a backup who actually the fans love and want installed as a starter. But there's a few teams. The teams that might want that are the ones that are so set and safe with their starter that it's not a threat. Burt Breer on Rich Eisen's show, I think, threw out the Philadelphia Eagles, which I think would be a really interesting move. I would also throw out a team like Baltimore for similar reasons. Like Lamar Jackson is not under threat, but Baltimore could use a guy like Justin Fields if Lamar Jackson gets hurt, which, let's be honest, has not been an unknown thing over the last few years. If Dallas hadn't already traded for Trey Lance, and maybe they'll flip him and do it again, Justin Fields in Dallas would be an interesting option. Like, again, what happens if our quarterback goes down? Justin Fields could potentially win you some games, even in the playoffs, because he's that dynamic, dangerous type of quarterback that's difficult to prepare for.
Yeah, Colts maybe another team to throw in there. Like, you know, if they're just like, hey, Anthony Richardson's right. fourth overall pick, like, this is not a discussion. We're bringing in Justin Fields to back him up. Maybe that's the thing. But that one's, again, a little bit more dangerous because you could sit here and say, no, Anthony Richardson's our guy, but him coming off of injury, he's still going to struggle next year. So do you want, as a team, to have to answer those questions if Richardson still struggles? Like, he probably will. I mean, it'll be an up-and-down year for Anthony Richardson upcoming. So I think and hope that there's going to be a lot of good, but do you want that? And right. I think that Fields is just in a – he's in a tough situation right now at the end of that rookie contract. He really is.
So let's pivot and talk about those teams that are in that quarterback needy alley that we mentioned before. Pick number 11, Minnesota. Pick number 12, Denver. And pick number 13, Las Vegas. As I said, even though they've added Sam Darnold, Gardner Minshew, I don't think any of those three teams have the quarterback that they want starting in 2024 on the roster right now. So where are they getting them from? Who do you think... When all is said and done, forget week one. Who do you think the week eight starter for each one of those teams is, and where is it coming from at this point?
Jeez. What a question. I think for Minnesota, it's going to be JJ. I think somehow, some way, he ends up on the Minnesota Vikings. It feels like it just makes too much sense. Denver, I also think, is going to get aggressive for a quarterback, but... For them, it's so tough. I'm tempted to say JJ for the Minnesota Vikings, Bo Nix for the Denver Broncos, and I don't know if he's going to be the starter by week eight, but like Michael Penix being an option right. for the Las Vegas Raiders. That's kind of where my mind goes immediately. I think the Raiders could go for a guy like Penix if he hits a sweet spot for him a little bit later in the draft, because I don't think it's going to be a 13.
That's what I'm going to say, yeah.
Or, you know, a guy like Spencer Rattler as well. I think you throw in Rattler's name into this discussion. I think Denver's going to try to be aggressive, but if they can't be aggressive because they only have a first-round pick, they don't have a second-round pick, and then it goes to number 76 in the third, they might be able to package. They've got a handful of fifth-round picks. They've got three fifth-round picks and two sixth-round picks. Okay, maybe you could package some of those and move up. Maybe they go out and get a guy like Spencer Rattler, who I'm not sure is going to be available at 76. You probably got to trade up a little bit to get him. But, yeah, I guess that's my final answer. That's my final answer. We're talking out loud here, people. Yeah. We're just going through the journey. J.J. McCarthy to the Vikings. Spencer Rattler to the Denver Broncos. Michael Penix Jr., to the Las Vegas Raiders.
Okay, so interestingly, so we got Minnesota staying at 11 and getting J.J. McCarthy from Michigan.
No. They're moving up.
Ooh.
I think Minnesota's moving up to 5 or 4.
Wow. So in your future here, we've got quarterbacks going 1, 2, 3 to Chicago, Washington, New England, and then Minnesota is jumping up to 5 or 6 to get QB4, J.J. McCarthy from Michigan.
Yeah, I feel like 5 is a sweet spot, right? Because Joe Ortiz, the new general manager for the Los Angeles Chargers, talked about how building a draft strategy and building a team comes from having a lot of picks. So I think that's what they're going to try to do, but they don't want to go too far down the draft order. So I think 11 is sort of, I don't want to say perfect because it takes them out of Malik Nabers or Romo Odunze range, but I think they could be pretty satisfactory with that getting back to 11. So if I was doing a mock draft right now, I would say Chicago takes a quarterback at 1, Washington takes a quarterback at 2, either New England or the New York Giants take a quarterback at 3. I could see the Giants, with the offseason that they have already had, getting aggressive, popping up from number 6 to number 3 if New England is not bought in on any of these quarterbacks that will be available for them at number 3. They move up, maybe go get themselves a Jaden Daniels, maybe a J.J. McCarthy, could upgrade from Daniel Jones, because clearly what they did during free agency, they're very all in on making a big change on this team. So I think New England or the Giants take a quarterback at number 3. I think Arizona probably stays at number 4, gets a really good football player. And then at 5, somebody's trading up for whoever quarterback 4 is going to be. This is just my mock draft as it would be this second. And I think that it would be Minnesota that's going to get up to 5 to do it.
Trading up for QB4 would terrify me as a concept. Like, if I needed a quarterback.
The Niners did it not even knowing who is going to be available.
Yeah.
They gave up 2 first-round picks for a guy that they didn't even know was going to be there.
But that, at the minimum, was QB3, knowing that...
That's true.
Knowing that the likelihood was... I mean, they knew... They had an understanding of who 1 was going to be. They probably had a pretty good idea of who 2 was going to be at that point. So they had 3 potential options that were seen as first-rounders and convinced themselves that any of the 3 was worth doing that. Now, we can talk about how wrong that was, which kind of makes my point. But my point being, if you know that at best you are trading up for the 4th guy on the board, that's just scary as a concept. Like, whatever about doing it to go get your guy who's the 2nd quarterback available... You can talk yourself into, all right, we get our choice of the 2nd best guy here. I mean, okay, if they love J.J. McCarthy and they think he's QB2 or whatever in the draft, that's a different story. But if you're just like, we need a quarterback and 3 of them are already gone, we need to get the 4th before we have no options, that's just how you end up with a disaster.
Two types of teams in this league, baby. One's that have a quarterback, one's that don't.
All right, so... The Vikings.
That's how teams are going to operate from now until the end of time. I'm not saying it's smart, but I'm saying I feel like that's what's going
to
happen.
So you have the Vikings trading up to 5 from 11 to get J.J. McCarthy for Michigan. You have Denver coming out of this draft with Spencer Rattler win the 3rd, 76. That's where he's coming from?
Yeah, so, I mean, for this podcast purposes.
Right. And then
I don't know if he makes the 76, but he'd be close enough. They'd be able to get him.
And then we have the Las Vegas Raiders coming out with Michael Penix Jr., presumably from round 2, 44 overall.
Probably, yeah.
Or they catch a miracle and the medical scare teams, Penix Jr. ends up sliding to the 5th round and they get
him. No, it's not going to happen. That's not going to happen.
All right. Well, there we go. So those are our 3 teams in quarterback hell right there in 11, 12, and 13, all of whom have been assigned a quarterback from Trev. After the first 3 have gone with the first 3 overall picks. Let's wrap this up by asking the question that we didn't ask at the start. We gave our favorite free agent draft or free agent hauls. Why do I keep saying draft hauls? Free agent hauls.
Getting close. We're getting close.
Who did the worst?
Oh, no. Yeah. Like hauls or
who,
just...
No, who's just done... Who's had the worst free... Who are the losers as a team of free agency so far?
Oh, I'm going to get old takes exposed for this. I know I'm going to, but I don't think the Titans are going to be very good next year. Nothing that they really did in free agency makes me think that they're going to be a very good football team. Lloyd Cushenberry was good. I'll say it. It's fine. Tony Pollard does not really move me at all whatsoever. I like Tajay Spears. Would have been cool with him and somebody else who would have been cheap, but instead you go spend the money that you could have given Derrick Henry on Tony Pollard to have kind of like the same running back there. Just one got a little bit more experience. I don't know. Kind of redundant to me. Didn't really love how they spent that money. I don't like Kenneth Murray either. I don't really, he doesn't really do anything at linebacker for me. So I just don't, the Titans didn't really go in a direction that I felt moved the team very well. And I think this team is going to have a top 5 pick a year from now.
Yeah, I didn't love the Titans free agency period. Not being very good is a very kind way of how you termed that earlier on non-public facing forums. The Dallas Cowboys are my losers.
Who is it?
The Dallas Cowboys.
Oh, sure. They didn't do anything. Did they do something yet?
They've re-signed a long snapper. That's it. That's all they've done. They've lost players. Like, they've seen players leave. Which is not ideal. You know, part of this whole thing is doing business by keeping your own players in-house. Like the Indianapolis Colts, I don't think have made an outside signing, but they've retained like 7 of their own players or something. So they've been doing business. Dallas has just done nothing. Like this is the sort of underrated. We think of Jerry Jones as this reactionary, you know, Madden franchise mode owner that goes, he doesn't actually do that much a lot of the time. And so they've lost Tyler Biadasz, a starting center. They've lost Dorrance Armstrong, one of their defensive linemen. They've lost players, and they've apparently, you know, made some phone calls in the running back market, haven't ended up with one. Tony Pollard's gone. What are we doing here?
All in, comma, my ass. to quote Skip Bayless.
Somebody put, I need a quote graphic that says, all in, comma, my ass, Trevor Sikkema, on the Dallas Cowboys. And then he's get tweeted out from the main account ASAP.
Yeah. I thought that they were going to do a little bit more, at least, you know, fight to, I think, retain some of those guys. Again, I wonder if the Cowboys are still just reeling from how the season ended. I mean, they have a lot of good pieces. They had a really nice season. And then just for it to end like that, I wonder if they were just kind of shell-shocked, like, okay, we thought we had the right guys in here. We thought we had the right formula. And then the postseason came around and that didn't happen. So clearly they're very happy with their team. But yeah, I mean, they got to be losers. I agree.
You know, there's still time. Like they've lost.
No,
pieces,
there's not. It's over.
No, okay, cool, fair enough.
Yep.
Never mind then. I was going to give them reasons for optimism, but if Trev's already ended it, the season's done. Mark, we haven't even hit the start of the new league year, and you've already ended it for them. Perfect.
What'd you think about the Packers and that magical 45 minutes where Aaron Jones and Josh Jacobs were on the team at the same time? like one of the Packers fans were when they traded for him, I feel like some people were like, we're going to have the greatest RB duo in the league. And
yes,
they truly might have. And then
I saw multiple tweets that were like, this is the best running back duo in the NFL. And then
it would have been.
We cut him.
Tough.
It is. It's also kind of funny that they signed Josh Jacobs to the exact same deal that they had Aaron Jones on, a four-year, $48 million contract. Like, it's the same deal. They just said, you've reached the end of yours. We just found another guy who's younger. It'll take the same contract. So, bye-bye. It's fascinating how the world works in the NFL sometimes. What's your favorite individual move? What's your favorite signing?
I like the Hunter one, but we talked about that already. Mm-hmm. I actually have two underrated ones that I feel like aren't getting enough love that should. Jermaine Illuminor going from the Raiders to the Giants, I think, is great for them, because with the Giants sitting at number six, they've got quarterback questions, they've got wide receiver, just overall offensive weapon questions, and then they also have offensive line questions. And I've been trying to figure out all offseason, where are they leaning? And it's hard for me to give them a wide receiver at number six in mock drafts, knowing how poorly Evan Neal played and knowing how good Joe Alt could be opposite from Andrew Thomas. And you could fix interior offensive line. Like, it feels like you could fix that almost every other year. Like, that's something that you could fix. But offensive tackle's tough. So Illuminor, I mean, he's not like the greatest offensive tackle in the world, but he's played really solid over the last 2 years.
Yeah.
And now he becomes somebody who at least gives you an option to start at right tackle if Evan Neal isn't great. And then if Evan Neal is great at tackle, they also signed John Runyon to play as at one of the guard spots. So now you have Illuminor, who could be this swing offensive lineman. And I just feel as though that's a really underrated signing that gives them a ton of flexibility to, like I said a few minutes ago, get aggressive if they want to get aggressive, to go up and get a quarterback in the draft, or the freedom to pick one of Malik Nabers or Romo Odunze at number six. So I think that move I really, really like for those reasons. And then the Geno Stone addition from the Cincinnati Bengals, I think, was huge. They played 1 year without Jesse Bates, and it was bad on the back end. I mean, I looked it up yesterday. Their coverage unit from just their safeties last year was like a 42.1 overall grade. Like, it was bad. It was not good without Bates. And they then go and get a guy who had an 85.3 coverage grade last season, had seven interceptions. Like, they needed a true free safety type of a player like Bates was for them in the years prior to him leaving and going over to Atlanta free agency last year. So they really desperately missed Jesse Bates, and I think that they got a good player in Geno Stone to fill that role better this year.
Yeah, I like that. I like the ones you mentioned. I love the Bryce Huff deal that we talked about before. I think that's a really good one. I love the Panthers trading for Deontay Johnson. I think that's a really nice addition that they've made. Not a signing, obviously, but a trade. And they, in order to make it happen, it was like a flip of seventh-round picks and getting rid of Dante Jackson, who they were probably going to get rid of at some point anyway. So they've parlayed a guy that was probably on his way out and a change of seventh-round picks into a receiver who, you know, maybe not the true number one superstar, but is a good receiver that gets open. Now, it comes with the risk, which is the folly of bringing in former Mike Tomlin wide receivers that tend to immediately detonate themselves as soon as they leave Pittsburgh. So there's that risk attached to it. But theoretically, I like this. My other favorite moves, though, I'm finding myself strangely becoming a running back apologist of late. And I love Derrick Henry to the Ravens. Like,
yep.
Everybody I feel as a neutral should want that deal just to see what it looks like. Derrick Henry going to the Baltimore offense with Lamar Jackson, no longer running behind the worst offensive line in the NFL. Like, I feel like we're going to see King Henry immediately reassert himself as one of the best running backs in football. And then the other running back deal I loved was Austin Ekeler to Washington. Ekeler, through not intentionally, but is becoming the poster child of like team-friendly contracts throughout his NFL career. The last deal that he signed with the Chargers, that four-year, $24 million deal, that was I used that as like my benchmark of that's as high as I would go for like a veteran running back. Once the price went above that point, I'm out. I'm just signing guys at that level and below, and then I'm drafting, and I'm trying to constantly keep that cycle going. That's like the most I would invest in a running back, and he was that guy. And he absolutely justified that deal by, you know, playing incredibly and to the point where he quite reasonably last season was like, okay, I want more money than this. I'm worth more than this. And the team was like, yeah, but this deal is so team friendly that we don't want to give you any more money. Sorry. And basically just told him to lump it, right? He couldn't get a trade done. And then he gets hurt last season, came back, didn't look quite like the same Austin Ekeler, and therefore hits free agency coming off a bad year where at his age, you know, you suddenly start to look at him and go, well, he's probably on the decline, you know. So now he gets a two-year $11.4 million
deal team-friendly
from Washington, right? With a $3 million signing bonus and just $4.8 million in year one. I would bet quite a large sum of money that Austin Ekeler dramatically outperforms that contract again. And like the Washington are buying low on Ekeler, who is a really top-tier receiving option who can still run well as well. It's going to be an absolute bargain for them.
Walt said Deontay Johnson is meaningless.
Ah.
Not to the Lord, brother. Not to the Lord, he's not. Not the Carolina Panthers either. He's wide receiver one now. Yeah. So
we should really get Walt's take for just every signing that happens. You should add it to the tracker.
I mean,
just a thumbs up or thumbs down from Walt.
Oh, that, yeah, that'd be simple. We can streamline it.
Yeah.
We got to put it behind a paywall, though. You can't give away that.
Absolutely. Yeah, you can't get that for free.
That's premium analysis.
Right. We probably need an extra tier of pay for that, you know.
you've got standard, you've got PFF premium, and then you've got Walt premium.
Yeah, that's where you get the extra bit. Let's answer a question from the chat before we get out of here. John C asks, can we discuss the Chargers? And you mentioned this before we went on air. They have sort of held fire on all these giant potential cap casualties that they've got, presumably angling for a trade, which has yet to materialize. So are we going to see the likes of Khalil Mack or Joey Bosa, Mike Williams, Keenan Allen? Like, half the roster is a giant bloated cap casualty potential. Are they actually going to do any of this, or are they just going to muddle on with these contracts?
Yeah, like you said, I think that they're trying to get whatever they can for these players. But whatever they're going to get, it's going to be low compensation anyway. So when I went through the exercise with Connor Rogers on NFL Stock Exchange show, we were trying to like rebuild the Chargers once it was clear that, you know, they were firing Staley and they were going to be bad. And we looked at this cap situation. We're like, this is horrendous. I mean, they have four of the top 12 cap hits in the NFL, which is insane because none of these players are quarterbacks.
Right.
Mike Williams, Keenan Allen, Joey Bosa, Khalil Mack, four of the top 12 highest cap hit players in the league. Not even quarterbacks. Joey Bosa, nobody's going to trade for him at that number. So you're going to have to figure something out. And with him being injured and his play kind of declining since he's been off the field a bunch, I think that he's probably just going to get released. And probably the same for Mike Williams because of the injuries as well. Nobody's really going to trade for him there. Mac is a free agent, isn't he? Or did I miss that?
I thought he was a free agent. I think he's still on the roster.
Or is he one more year with the team?
I think one more. Let me check.
Yeah, okay.
I believe he's still there.
Well, he must have one more year. He must not be a free agent because we wouldn't be having this conversation if he wasn't.
Right.
But his cap is crazy. So, you know, he could do something where I think that they would obviously like to extend him and, you know, move his money around.
Yeah, he's on the roster for 2024 at a cap hit of $38.5 million.
Right. So you have to do something with him. You're either releasing him or you're signing him to some sort of extension and trying to move the money around. But Khalil Mack is 33.
Yep.
Why would he sign an extension with this Chargers team? He's basically saying, no, cut me, and I'm going to go play for somebody who I can go win a Super Bowl with. So I think Keenan Allen's going to stay. Like, Keenan Allen, you can figure out his money. You could probably extend him if you want to. You can move some money around. I think Bosa and Mike Williams are both gone. I don't think they're going to be able to get anything for him. Mack is the one that you could get something for, because I believe that somebody would trade some sort of day three capital to get him on their team. But you're also, I think you probably got to be in contact with him and not totally piss him off to go to a team that, I mean, he doesn't care about, because he's not going to sign some sort of an extension if that's the case. And he needs to sign an extension, because if he doesn't, like you said, the cap hit is massive. So, yeah, that's my overall thoughts. I think at least two of those guys are gone, maybe Mac as well. It just depends how they're negotiating these.
Yeah, I think of their four monster cap hits, so Khalil Mack, Joey Bosa, Keenan Allen, and Mike Williams all right now have a cap number for the 2024 NFL season of at least $32.4 million. That's insane, right? Of those four guys, I think Keenan Allen is the only one I would really be interested in keeping. And even though each one of them also comes with a dead cap hit of at least $11 million, it's the perfect time to do that, right? New regime comes in, new head coach.
It's also better than 30 on the cap.
Right, exactly. So each one of them also comes with a cap saving of at least $14 million. So with the dead cap hit, you're saving $14 million plus three of the four, $20 million plus in terms of cap saving. So now's the time to do it, right? Harbaugh's come in, new regime. Let's just get the house in order now. Like, these are the moves that need to happen. We need to strip out the dead contracts that we don't want around. Keenan Allen, I think, has immense sort of institutional value, and is still their number one wide receiver, so you need to keep him around. The rest of them, I think you can just eat it now, go in a different direction, and free up the salary cap space, and accept that you're going to have, $50 million worth of dead cap space this year. So that's what I would do, is maybe someone will give you a late round pick for somebody. I wouldn't bet on it, though, and I think eventually you're just going to have to cut them and get on with it.
Yep.
All right.
I agree with your plan.
That'll do it for our show today. We will be back tomorrow, myself and Brad, I believe, this time. Steve will be back next Monday. But thank you for listening to the show today, and we will talk to you again tomorrow.